Jesus.
Direct from the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex.
It's like honey in your ear hole.
Welcome back to The Superiority Complex, everybody. I was up late last night, John. You could tell by my bleary eyes and my raspy voice.
Raspy.
I thought it's because you were still in your pajamas.
I was at a five-hour marathon pitching duel between the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Brewers of Milwaukee in the game four of the National League Championship Series.
Who won?
Gurgle, gurgle, gurgle.
Who's on
the Dodgers?
First?
Dodgers in the walk-off. Bellinger. He's been abysmal this season. Great on defense, not so great with a bat. Too many big hacks. All these Dodgers swinging for the fences. I'm taking a lot of heat for saying, just make contact. Apparently, that's not the way the game goes anymore. We're only swinging for the fences. Well, there you go.
What the outfield's
for. Stop trying to do a home run.
I guess they won with contact last night, so maybe I'm right. Maybe.
Are you implying that the game of baseball should be played as just get on the fucking base?
And move a guy over?
That sounds like
a great idea. My dad
That's
yelled.
Not entertaining.
The whole time my dad yelled at the whole time at the TV.
Hit the fucking ball.
He just couldn't.
Just tap it
he
in.
He talked about people from the Angels. Like, he's like, all he did was do that. And he had the highest.
You should have seen game
the
three
ball.
Where
place
the
ball.
Dodgers were left scoreless. And all they were taking were big, fat, juicy hacks. And whiffing up a storm.
That makes sense.
Anyway, it was a great way to end. It was fun. I got to hear my favorite song. That is, of course, Short People by Randy Newman.
Yes. Sean Green was there, right?
Sean Green and Eric Karros.
I had the hots for Sean Green.
Why? You like the way he would never run up on a fly ball?
You're so mean. Let it,
I'll hit home runs, but I won't run up on a fly ball.
I liked him and I like Ethier.
Short people.
They're all outfielders.
The great Short Eric Karros was there catching for Sean. And he threw just the way he always used to throw from right field. A big, lazy, big, lazy
Jason Bateman was there.
Ball. Jason Bateman's always there. Willie Nelson was
Willie
there.
Nelson was
wow.
there.
Willie Nelson was
there. Ashton Kutcher was there with his wife.
Yeah, wearing a brown Dodger hat. You wear
it was
Dodger,
weird. It was like an orangey.
You wear Dodger blue or you wear nothing.
That was
okay?
weird.
I wore my Hawaiian, the shirt you guys got me from Hawaiian
hey.
Night because people think I'm Hawaiian. And Ohana means family. And family means no one gets left on base. Except for
nobody made it
10
on base
guys
either.
Yeah.
No one got
No, the Dodgers left 10 men on base.
I know
base.
They did. I watched.
We're calling them the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's my joke. Speaking of which, speaking
people
of Dodgers,
say nice
though,
things about your shirt.
Game five. Well, I wore it, and then as soon as I got to the game, jersey hat, because that thing is blue, or the shirt you gave me is black. Awesome. But I was like, no, we go all blue. Ashton. And then my cousin, it's her fault. My cousin got a whole row of seats. So it was me and a bunch of my cousins. We took up a whole row in the reserve section. You know, Mexicans. But my one cousin, Sam, she wore a Dodgers shirt in USC colors. And I was like, what are you trying to do? And that's the reason that it took 13 innings.
They sell that?
Well, they have all these special
yeah,
promotions.
I have a UCLA Dodger
there
hat.
There you go.
And it's a light, like a baby blue.
You don't mix
yellow.
The maroon and the blue. It doesn't go.
Mm-mm.
Doesn't go. All right. Anyway, Dodgers game five of the NLCS is today at 2:30.
Are they playing in Milwaukee?
They are playing at Dodger Stadium
again
today, and then two games in Milwaukee. So they have
if
to win
it gets
today.
That far.
Kershaw's on the mound. I got to get out of here. So just I'm going to name three movies. You tell me what you rated them, and then we're going to get out of here. All
right. So 2:30, you got more time, right? Does it really start at 2:30?
No, John. Get that out of your head. 2:00. We're doing this thing in
2:05.
Who's leading in the series right now? Dodgers.
It's tied up.
It
two,
is
two?
Tied up.
They would have. They
it was 2-1.
It would have. They would have been in a big hole if they wouldn't have won.
The game's at 2:05. We have extra 5 minutes.
Yeah, I have to
no,
get all
have
the way
exactly
back.
Exactly an hour.
And I don't want to listen to Charlie Steiner on the radio going. You never know what it is with Charlie Steiner. He takes a swing
and misses.
at the wall, fly ball. He's the worst. Oh, Charlie Steiner, you bastard.
Hater.
Have you ever tried to listen to Charlie Steiner after Vin Scully?
No.
Anybody after Vin Scully is going to fall short.
Are you going to put it in it right now?
He's all, here's what he sounds like.
Yeah.
How'd you like the movie?
Good movie.
Mm-hmm.
8 out of 10.
How about we just give scores? And let's go. Okay, that's it.
All right, here.
See you next week. Okay.
See you next week.
A 5, a 6, and a 9. Okay, see you next week.
What do you rate all three movies?
Just guess.
In no particular order. 7, 8,
all together,
and 5.
Like an 8. Like an 18.
A 7, three. And like a 4.
Ooh, which one's a 4? You'll never know. Moving on.
Struck out swinging. They lead it 4-1. Max with a fly ball to right. Polanco going back to the wall. He looks up, and it is gone. A home run. Ed Max beyond Thunderdome.
And by the way, that was Jock Peterson, not Max Muncy. Just so you guys know.
He got it wrong?
He got it wrong.
Oh, boy. How long can you do that without getting fired?
You know who didn't get it wrong?
Vin Scully.
Ever.
Yeah, I'm sure Vin made a mistake.
Never in his life.
So
he can do no wrong.
He couldn't remember a time when it happened.
Where should you guys think we should start
in
with?
In Brooklyn, maybe.
Because it's not.
No, let's talk about the movie Jake didn't watch.
Yeah, okay, well, we will definitely talk about. So we'll talk about Bullet, but we have to talk about it right before we talk about Dirty Harry.
Yes, Dirty Harry.
So what do you want to do first?
Not Dirty Harry.
Patton.
Do you want to do Patton or do you want to do...
Want to talk about Patton?
Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Do Patton.
You mean Rommel, you magnificent son of a bitch, I read your book!
You magnificent bastard.
Oh, bastard, yeah.
That's it, you're one. Okay. You get one, John.
But then that's it,
you guys are done.
Now Patrick gets one.
Nope, nothing.
Then just Steve.
That's it. I told them they were doing it nonstop before you guys got here.
What's up?
And I was like, you get one each on the show. Nope.
Two strikes.
That was Patrick's.
Nope. That's it. No more. So
you mean the soundtrack?
Which Mario has.
What's it sound like?
Yeah, John got me a copy of the Patton soundtrack. I'm gonna skip past.
What's it sound? What's it sound like? I don't remember.
Can you put us in the mood for the movie and maybe play a song from that wonderful soundtrack?
It'd be great if that really was a soundtrack.
I mean, there wasn't really modern music, which was kind of nice. I didn't have, a strange song taking me out.
That no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. You want it?
Someone didn't like this.
By making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Are we listening to this whole thing?
We know Justine's rating already.
Someone didn't like the first 10 minutes of the movie.
I wasn't Justine.
I hate this movie with a passion.
Did you really?
This is going to be my favorite
scene. It's a movie about war.
Did you watch it with Justine?
Yes.
Okay, what was the look on her face when it said intermission?
We're not done.
I was, yeah. I yelled.
She was pissed.
I was like, intermission.
Intermission.
I was pissed.
Justin, I was not sure if you were going to love or hate.
Oh, no,
this.
I hate
Screw
this
your
movie.
Intermission. I'm leaving.
I told Patrick.
Tell me how the movie ends.
I said someone told me they were like, oh, because it's long. I'm like, I sat through the longest day and I freaking love that.
There
this
you
one,
go.
I hate this one.
Huh, ooh,
yeah. Why do you hate this movie?
It's boring. I couldn't.
But didn't you love it when he was directing traffic?
No.
Did you not like that part?
You want to tell them? Or you want me to say it?
No, I made him continue the movie.
She didn't finish it after
I went to work, so I couldn't.
She didn't watch the rest.
You know, I understand. I understand. With this one, I do understand that. So you didn't make it past the intermission?
No, I worked, and okay. I was like, just watch it. He's like,
so
do you want me to
wait?
You
didn't see him directing traffic?
It's not exactly like North by Northwest.
No?
I kind of get it.
I really just...
It was the best.
Maybe I'll watch the last part, but I really don't
How
think
far did you get?
Intermission.
She made it to intermission.
I was pissed.
Okay, so you made it
It's
to
definitely a character piece.
Yes,
this movie,
exactly.
For sure. So if you don't like him, then you're not going to.
And he's not a very sympathetic
character. Well, I asked him, I was like, do you think, if I watch the other half, do you think I'd be happy? He's like, nope. I'm like, okay.
Because it's more the same.
It's all the same.
It's more the same. If you're interested in Patton, you get more.
She's like, is there? Does it get exciting? Does it get different? I'm like, no, it's about the same.
Yeah, then I said I didn't want to watch it.
I love it. Patton is a 1970 film directed by Franklin J. Schaffner, who previously gave us Planet of the Apes. It was written by Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, and he got the Oscar for it.
He got the Oscar. The
Lovely Wine Coppola.
Jerry. Yeah, it is.
He says that he may not have been able to, they were getting ready to fire him on the set of The Godfather, and he said if he hadn't won the Oscar for Patton, he says he may have been fired, but it would have been kind of embarrassing. He just won the Oscar, so they're like, all right, stick with it.
Thank God.
I know. He said that changed my life.
It starred George C. Scott and Carl Malden, and it was released February 4th, 1970.
Mm-hmm. He did a fantastic job as
well. And he was nominated. He did win. It won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and George C. Scott won Best Actor, but declined to accept the award.
What was his reason for declining it?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I never heard about that. You always hear about Brando declining and all that, but I never heard why.
Because is he saying then an award show is just Hollywood masturbating to themselves all day long?
I don't know why.
That's what it is.
I feel like I'm sleeping and you're lying to me right now.
No, no.
He won all those awards?
Yeah, he did a great job.
It's a great movie.
Great movie.
If you can pay attention. I hated it. I just hated it. Every minute.
It's a character piece. If you find him distasteful, it's not going to be a fun 3 hours.
I really hated that guy. The main guy I hated.
Then you're not
going
to like the movie because it's all about him.
But it's history, and it's, God, you learn so much.
I know.
Like, wow. Things just turn on personality sometimes.
So bloodthirsty.
And Carl Malden is so understated, but he really is the backboard that George C. Scott's hitting the ball
against. And he does look like Omar Bradley in real life, by the way. In a letter to the Motion Picture Academy, George C. Scott stated he did not feel himself to be in competition with other actors. However, regarding the rejection of the Academy Award, Scott famously said elsewhere, "The whole thing is a meat parade. I don't want any part of it."
Good man.
Cranky guy.
It's a meat parade.
Curmudgeon.
Mm-hmm. There is a sequel, by the way, it was made for TV called The Last Days of Patton. So
if you want to see that, just
Oh, you'd love it.
I would just love it. Mm-hmm.
So, Justine, what didn't you like about it?
Everything.
Like, but why?
But explain.
Explain, yes.
But why?
That, I kind of knew it from the beginning of it.
The very beginning?
The very beginning. Just got so bored of that speech.
That's his character in a nutshell. That's him in a nutshell, though. And you get a gist of what he's going to be for the rest of the movie in the first 5 minutes.
I just sat there like, why is he still talking?
Wow.
This is kind of like I kept looking at the time like, still?
This is war movie. You love it. It's your bread and butter.
Yes.
I mean, they were like, yeah, you're supposed to like it because it's a war movie.
This movie, while it is a war movie, doesn't have, like, there's
and it also
one
looks
tank
so
battle.
Cheesy.
And that's about it. You get a lot of troop movement.
It's more of a personality
like that,
piece.
So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What about when he's shooting at the airplanes?
I mean, that part was
crazy. Yeah, Sanjabetches, and you just, like, start shooting at the plane.
This is all about Patton. It's not necessarily about the. What? It's not necessarily. This isn't like one of those movies you go see for the battle scenes.
It is. It is a war movie, but it's not a like war movie.
Patrick, what did you think?
You don't get those moments.
I thought this was fascinating. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really good character story about Patton. You get a lot of information, and it makes you really curious about like his story, and then you wanted to know more.
Was he crazy? He was fucking nuts.
Oh, he's
insane. But I get why Justine didn't like it, and it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
I totally understand. This is, but honestly,
I told her it was an intellectual movie, and
and she threw the TV at you.
Pretty much.
I mean, sometimes you just want a good popcorn movie, just actions. And
this was not a popcorn movie.
No, not at all.
You have to pay attention.
But he was fascinating. You wanted to know so much more about Patton. You wanted to know, like when. Intermission hit. Before it actually said intermission on the title card, I thought the movie was over. So I was like, I need to know more. I got to keep watching. I need to find out some more information. They say, okay, cool. It's an intermission. We're keeping going.
I love it. You're like, more. And Justine's all, enough.
Yeah. But I mean,
that's enough.
There was some really like interesting point of views about how they, from upper, you know,
command.
command thought and viewed the war. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, we watch a lot of war movies where it's the individual and you see, you know, the lone soldier in the bunker or the trenches suffering and trying to live out. And this is really, he's not seeing, while he's out there, he's not seeing a lot picture. Of it until really the end,
mm-hmm.
right? When you see that last tank battle when they're out of gas and stuff like that, and you actually see how affected he starts to notice. Now, it doesn't change him, but he does see it, and he does realize what's yeah. wrong. And
then just continues to rampage through Russia.
Well, he's at the mercy of politics.
And then you see
dad.
How the Cold War starts.
Yeah. Well, you also see how ego kind of drives.
Oh, yeah, it's all ego. It's absolutely.
I'm in competition with Montgomery. I don't want Montgomery to get there first.
Yeah.
He even said, he's like, do you want to be remembered for shoveling shit, or you want to be remembered for winning the war?
That's right.
And it was really cool to see him, like, his whole philosophy on Past Live and stuff. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then slapping a guy.
Oh, slapping a soldier and then having to apologize to everybody. And even though his apology was a little bit two-faced.
It was not an apology at all.
No, it wasn't.
I love it. That was the bare minimum.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to do the bare minimum of what they asked me to do. Yeah.
But it was really, I thought it was fascinating. I enjoyed it a lot.
Jake,
and I got a great line out of it.
Which one?
The Rommel, you brilliant bastard! I'd read your book.
They did that in Mystery Science Theater one
great.
Time.
It was great. I was just like,
you
oh
magnificent
my god,
bastard!
The line I like is, "If you put your hand in a pile of goo, where's your best friend's face?"
Oh my god, that part.
Yeah. The other day, I on Twitter, I quoted this movie the other day because Hyunjin Ryu from the Dodgers pitched a gem. I just wrote, "Ryu, you magnificent bastard," which is always a quote that I take from this John, you magnificent bastard. Jake, let's talk about your thoughts and feelings on Patton.
I feel the same as Patrick. I thought it was a great character piece. You get to see how psychotic he really is. He's fucking insane. It's everything is driven by ego. He's like, I need to do more. I need to prove. Like, I need to, you know, I want to make my, you know, mark on the world, and
masculinity
doesn't matter who he takes down with him, how many soldiers he kills. He wants to be the one remembered for winning the war.
Yeah, he even tries to kind of screw over his friend Bradley.
Yep. It was very much Manifest Destiny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and then Bradley ends up being the one in charge, you know,
which good for him.
Yeah,
you need a sane.
Thank God,
you need a sane head. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, there's one line. It just shows how crazy he is. Like, he was like, I need a prayer. Like, when he's talking to the guys, like, I need someone to pray for good weather. I need a prayer within the hour. Yeah. And they get good weather. And he's like, someone needs to give that man a medal first.
Yes.
I'm like, Jesus.
The other cool thing about this movie is you really get to see that while he is insane and crazy, he was a brilliant strategist.
Tactician,
he was
a tactician, yeah.
And
yeah.
He had, you know, a lot of his ideas worked really, really well.
Look how many times they show him reading those books. He's going all the way back to Athens. You know, it's like he knew military history backward and forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was it? He was talking about how Germans have never attacked in the winter, so that's why they're going to do it this time, kind of thing.
Yeah,
and lo and behold.
Yeah, he knew. He knew. Knows. Yeah, he's a brilliant general. That's the thing. That's why you can't replace him. They'll move him around, but they never get rid of him. You know, he gets disciplined. And he gets, but it's like he always ends up.
There's that moment where he says, "I thought of this 3 months ago. You're the guy. You're the guy we need." Because he says, "Yeah, basically."
That son of a. Never mind. I'll be cool.
Yeah.
I'll be cool.
It's like, because you're the guy we need. We do need a guy who's just going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the war, we just got a guy who's going to make it happen.
And he runs his soldiers into the ground, but they get it done, which is crazy.
Yeah.
They don't have to love me. They just have to do what I tell them to do.
Yeah.
That's right. There's a great line in. That I thought in Full Metal Jacket, where one of the colonel, there's a colonel, he's just in it for a minute, but he tells Matthew Modine, "All I ask of my men is they obey my word as they would the word of God."
Yeah.
And that's like, that's all I ask.
Yeah.
And that's the way Patton was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But he won the war. You know, he was a big part of the reason they won the war in Europe.
He's the guy they needed, you know.
John, what do you think of this film?
I like it. I like it. It is, yeah, it's true. If you're going for this is not a popcorn movie, basically. You know, this is a personality piece. You're finding all about what made Patton tick. And Coppola said that was the whole thing. That he says that opening speech, he says they didn't like it at all. You know, he wrote it when he was in his early 20s, and it kicked around for years before they actually made it. And he didn't think they were going to make it. You know, he kind of got sent off after he wrote it. They said, well, you know, he pretty much got fired. But he said the thing they didn't like was that opening speech.
That speech was great.
And he says he thought he cobbled that together from like five different speeches. And
actual speeches from Patton.
Yeah, and he says, and they ended up using it. He was kind of surprised years later when they made the movie because he just thought, well, that's it. They didn't want me. That's it. And they used a lot of his script. And he says that at that time, you know, he was writing it like in the late 60s. And he said he had to strike a balance. He said, you know, because, you know, it's right in the middle of Vietnam. He says, I had to strike a balance between the lefties and the right. And he said, there was something about Patton to appeal to both sides. I just had to find a way to show both sides of him. He wasn't just this crazy warmonger. You know, he was an intellect. Mm-hmm. He was a big reader, knew war history. He wrote poetry.
Yeah.
He was I loved that.
He was a deeper, yeah, as a poet. He was a deeper guy than people gave him credit. He wasn't just a mad dog. He was a guy that really, you know, was very much into the philosophy of war. And did believe in reincarnation and all that, that he had probably been through this before, you know?
You know who wrote that? I did.
So he said that was the trick. So
shameless plug.
Watching that movie, I always think about that, how he's trying to find a way to show you both sides. If he's, you know, and he pretty much succeeds. It is a great script.
Yeah.
It's a great performance, and it's beautifully shot, but it's a really great script. Not easy to do, to make a guy like Patton interesting for 3 hours, you know.
I understand where just it's coming from, though, because this is the same problem I have with Lawrence of Arabia. I think it's a beautifully done movie, just about a character I don't really care about, or I don't really get to know, but I'm looking at all this beautiful scenery, so, you know.
Yeah, some of these guys are
it was wonderfully shot.
These are not people that you'd necessarily want to spend time with, but you have to find a way as a screenwriter to unlock it and find a way for everyone to get something out of it.
It's an interesting. I hadn't seen it in years, so I go back either. And watch it again. It was pretty amazing.
It's an epic.
Yeah. Let's talk ratings for this sweet baby. We'll start. We'll end with Justine.
I can't wait to hear those.
John, what
bringing
give,
down the average.
John, what do you give Patton, buddy?
Oh hell, this is like an 8. You know, okay. this is an epic. It's. I can see where somebody would be bored. I really could. But for me, it's an 8. I enjoy it.
Jake?
Yeah, I agree. I give it about an 8. It's not something that I would want to regularly watch. It's something I would maybe watch once in a while.
Yeah. But it's definitely worth it.
It's
definitely worth watching again in the future. Yeah.
But you have to be ready to sit and watch and pay attention because there's a lot of little nuances to him that you, that you need
I watched
to
it about honestly watched it about a month ago.
Yeah.
And I felt like, okay, I'm good with it, you know, because there's a lot to chew on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
right, it's not like sitting through Lethal Weapon or something where you're half watching and half eating or something, you know. This is like you have to kind of like absorb it.
You can't multitask. You have
and
to pay attention.
It is a lesson in World War II, really. Yeah.
Jake, or no, I'm sorry, we already did Jake. Patrick, you magnificent bastard.
I agree. This is an 8. This definitely earned an 8. It was a really, really well done character. And even visually, like, you don't get a lot of, like, beautiful scenery in this, but what portions you do see really gives you the feeling of that vast expanse that they were going through.
This is a movie that gives you a good sense of what. It's kind of hard, for whatever reason, this movie always. It brings across whatever the weather's like. Somehow, if it's cold, it looks cold. If it's hot, you know what I mean?
That shot of the scorpions crawling over that guy's face.
Yeah.
You get in two seconds, you get the idea. Oh my God, they're out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
And you're right. The snow scenes, you're like, oh man, they're freezing their asses off. Yeah.
And I mean, it was really interesting too that like the big battle scenes that you do have in this movie, there's no like dramatic music. It's very much the same. They're going for that same regal tone throughout
to kind of
portray more of you're viewing it from Patton's point of view than you are from an individual.
This isn't Platoon. You're not in the trenches.
No. Except for the one scene where a guy gets rolled over by a tank, which you need in every movie.
But he doesn't die. Ducks down, he holds himself down, and then he gets back up.
I'm thinking of another movie. Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay. Justine.
2.
Wow.
It wasn't a 1.
Is that the lowest?
No, what's a 1?
Have you ever given something a 1?
She gave something like
Bonnie
a 0.
Bonnie and Clyde was horrible.
She gave like a 0. That a 1?
She likes this more than Bonnie and Clyde.
Give Bonnie and Clyde a 1?
I would rather have that movie on to fall asleep to. Bonnie and Clyde, I could not watch. And he was at the game, by the way.
Who, Warren Beatty?
Yes. I saw him and I was like, I don't forgive you for Bonnie and Clyde.
Whoa! Imagine if she met him and she said, I don't forgive you for Bonnie
and
Clyde. If
I saw him, I might turn around.
Wow. But the violence, too, in this movie Beatty, was like, a lot more graphic than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like you actually see some shit.
Well, then there's that scene in the hospital where they're not, they don't have any...
You mean where he beats the kid?
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
he's
no.
crying. That's so sad.
Yeah. That there's all that whole thing, and then, but let's talk about.
So a two.
What'd you rate it?
Brian? I give Patton about. It's a 7 for me. It's a solid 7.
I agree. It's good. It's good rating.
Justine dropping it down to a 6 average. Terrible.
So better. Casablanca is better. Mm-hmm. Casablanca is better.
Yes.
Okay.
What's the bottom ratings you've given ones and twos? Yeah,
these are the two worst that we see.
So Bonnie and Clyde was a 1, and this is a 2.
Yeah. I think I gave something a 3 or 4.
You know what? Paint Your Wagon's not on our list, and that would probably be pretty low, too.
Did you like this more than Paint Your Wagon?
No, I like Paint Your Wagon better. Oh. I had some Clint Eastwood in that, and it was
kind of
funny.
You get him walking through the flowers going, I gave my love.
Yeah.
Cherry.
And then they become friends. It's so weird.
That had no bones.
You guys don't know. You guys haven't finished the movie.
Which one?
Paint Your Wagon.
Yeah, we don't know. Nor will we.
I know.
I think it should be a double feature with Dirty Harry.
No.
Two sides, same coin.
Here we go.
The two sides of Connie's coin.
Are we doing Planet next?
Planet where apes evolved from men.
Men.
It's got to be an ant. Don't look for
That's
it, Kayla.
Crazy.
You may not like what you find. Damn you! All the hell!
The year, 3,955. Charlton Heston. As Taylor, a 20th century astronaut, space wrecked in the incredible future. Linda Harrison, as Nova, a savage beauty from the enslaved and voiceless human race.
Somehow she looks amazing. It's so
They're
weird.
They're marked with target practice.
They all look horrible, and she has the best hair. Eyebrows look good.
James Francis, no as sense. Astronaut Brent, on a reckless mission to rescue Taylor. Trapped by the swaggering, brutal
it's
master
shitty,
race of
one
apes
line.
Who dominate the Earth.
The swaggering.
A planet shattered by the atomic war of a distant
Yeah, it's like a weird...
That track. Sounded about right, because it was her first word. Taylor!
Taylor! Taylor! Taylor! Next is Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Sequel to Planet of the Apes. A planet where... Apes evolve from men?
Apes evolve from men.
It's a madhouse!
You blew it up. Damn you.
All
to hell.
To hell.
You.
Spock.
Rommel, you magnificent bastard. I read your book.
James Franciscus is like
Just
the...
ruins that line.
James Franciscus is like the poor man's Charlton Heston.
Yes.
He's almost like got the same sort of, he's got the same teeth. He's got the same sort of clenched jaw, you know?
Yeah. James, yeah, he's, it's like he's,
it's a
like,
bloody nightmare.
It's like he came out of his rib or something. So let's talk about Beneath the Planet of the Apes. Who here was excited to make another trip to the Planet of the Apes?
I actually was.
Yeah. It's a great, you know, it's a fun series.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's, you know, and this is probably the worst.
It is.
This is probably the worst of them.
Because you can tell, I was watching it going, yeah, as a kid I loved this, but now as an adult, it's like the budget takes a huge dip.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God. There's those, some of those masks.
It makes you appreciate
really,
the first one.
Some of those
so
masks
much
are kind of
Because the third one is actually pretty sharp. When they come to...
The writing gets really, really good. They get goofier and goofier as they go on, but the writing is really good.
But I was thinking, God, the third is so much better than the second because it's like, you know, all the thing with the mutants is just ridiculous, you know?
It makes sense.
So let's start with Patrick this time. Patrick, what'd you think of this one, man?
I was on board until they tried to melt his brain with their thoughts.
Oh.
It just went... It went like south. Like, I was cool with, okay, he discovers the New York subway. That looks really cool. I get it. He's kind of figuring out the destroyed city, and there's more down there. He gets into the cathedral church, and I'm like, okay, I'm on Star Trek.
Yeah. It feels like
feels like an episode.
It went from a really different science fiction movie to I'm on Star Trek.
It also starts looking like a TV show more than a movie.
Yeah, it did. As soon as it looked like they had the little silver foil and it's just like,
they spent
oh my
a
God.
Lot less on this one. Even though the first one made a lot of money, they said 20th Century Fox is in big trouble because they lost money, I think, on things like Hello, Dolly and Dr. Doolittle. So they said, we're making a lot of money off of Planet of the Apes, but you're going to have to spend less on this sequel. So it shows, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, the visual effects were pretty rough.
Yeah.
I get it. You could tell they didn't have a big budget. So
I really hope. Did anybody notice the general when he was talking that his mouth didn't really open at all?
They never do. Yeah.
He had to really emote for it to open.
That is good
makeup,
a couple
of them did.
On James Gregory. That's probably the best makeup.
Yeah, the gorillas, the moves, the mouths never move. Did anyone notice it's not Roddy McDowall as Cornelius? Did you guys notice it was a different actor?
Yes.
As Cornelius.
It was Cornelius was different. Yeah, I noticed
He was doing another movie, so they got another Brit.
The original Cornelius will be back.
For the rest of them.
For the rest
He's
of them.
In the next three movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was kind of disappointed.
Really? But
I was okay with it, but it really made me appreciate the first one so much more.
It makes that first one look great.
And you're just like, wow, the first one was really good. And then this one, you're just like, no.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually also, too, it really made me appreciate the most recent
prequels. The most, yeah.
Because, I mean, that's more of an interesting backstory and grounding things into reality versus, oh, they worship a nuclear missile.
John, what do you think? Well, this ties in well to Dr. Strangelove, though.
Yes. But it's just Dr. Strangelove had a completely different feel compared to this.
They take place in the same universe.
Yeah.
Do they?
Do they really?
Think about it.
I mean, it makes sense.
They even call this the Doomsday Bomb when he says they
created
this bomb. And they go,
it would be awesome if it was, wasn't it?
It would fit, but it's just like the whole psychic face-peeling mutant thing just threw me off.
What if James Franciscus is in the subway and OPE is written all over the... All over the
shit. Not even that. Just have it end with that. He gets into the subway. He sees OPE scrawled on the wall. End movie. I would freaking lose it. I'd be like, ah!
John, what do you think of this one? You're a huge... You're a huge Planet of the Apes guy.
I am. It's silly. When I was a kid, I loved it. It's silly. This is probably... Yeah, it probably is the worst of the bunch. Out of the five originals, this is probably the silliest. But you do get to see, you know, the main characters. It's the last time you see, like, Dr. Zaius and all those characters.
Yeah, that's true.
But you will follow... You got to stick with the third one because Cornelius and Zira come to 1973 L.A. So we're going to see that one, right?
That's right. Yeah. We're going to see them all.
That's much sharper. This one's just kind of silly. You know, it's kind of goofy. A lot of it, I realize now, is just the budget is so low. You know?
It seems like all the budget went to get extras. Because they have that huge gorilla army.
Yeah. Like you're right. It's probably all on extras. Yeah. And you can see, like, the group shots... The front row or the second row, you've got good makeup, and in the back they're just wearing
the red Halloween mask.
When they're in the cathedral seating, right there, you just see like a lot of the chimpanzees just there's just black paint over the eyes.
Yeah,
and it's just they look
like Halloween masks.
Yeah.
So there's some interesting ideas. You could have done something kind of interesting with the people that survived and went underground, but because it's such a silly script and it's such a silly makeup.
The script wasn't good because you don't get a lot of good... Like, the first one, you have a lot of good character development with, like, Dr. Zaius and Zira and stuff like that. They have a lot of really good dialogue.
Well, you got Rod Serling was a main force on that first movie, and so that's why
this
the writing is so sharp.
Didn't have anything.
And the directing was sharper. You know, that was an A picture. This one, it all kind of looks like a TV show.
Feels like a B movie.
The problem with this, too, is psychic powers is right out of the 60s. It's right out of like the LSD, like all that. Like, it's just like, that's so 60s. And it dates it. If they had just been mutants.
Dates it. How about the protesting chimpanzees?
Yeah.
You know, freedom, justice. You know, they get the placards and like, get rid of them.
We only speak when we pray to our God. We have no trifles with.
Out of the way, young people. Or what does he say? Out of the way.
The ending I always thought was kind of cool because they said, well, this is going to be the end of the series, you know, because Charlton Heston says, I'll come back, but this time you really got to kill me off. And that's got to be the end of my character. I will come back, but this has got to be it. And he says, I'll do like a little thing at the beginning and I'll come back for the end, but I don't want to be in the whole movie, which is why they got James Franciscus. So that's why you just get a little bit at the beginning. And then I did always like the finale where he's the one that goes, you know, you bloody bastard. He just hits the button. The bomb goes off. Yeah. And you go, well, that's really the end of the
Whoops.
That's it. I loved it.
And then you get Paul Frees at the very end, you know, in the billions and billions of galaxies.
Billions and billions.
Oh, that's right.
A small planet is now dead. That's it. The end of the movie.
Small green planet.
Think, yeah.
That's
an insignificant planet, yeah.
Ah. That is a good ending.
It is. It's just such an over-the-top ending where, I mean, that last 10 minutes where they, you got all the gorillas trying to bring the bomb down. There's a block and tackle. You know, they're all bringing it down. The steam's coming out. And Heston's just all, that's it. We're done.
If I can't blow it up, I'll pull it down.
And then Zaius is still going on with it. You know, mankind is capable of nothing but death and destruction. He's like, all right, I'll show you.
Yeah.
See that button?
Love it. You do get a Dr. Zaius is a little bit more sympathetic in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's like, I'll go with him, because if I don't go with the army, who knows what the hell they're going to do.
You know? And like a jerk, hey, two generals. See? It's like he was like the gorilla Patton.
James Gregory.
What's his name?
From Manchurian Canada.
General Coco. What's his name?
Ursus.
Oh, that's
Ursus.
General Coco.
General Ursus. It's weird when they're in the steam bath.
It's like, really? What the hell?
It's the first time you see him without. It's the last time
He's
you see him without
suit.
Any clothes on. Yeah.
Somebody took just a big thing of fun
then,
fur and was like, "Here, put this
and
on."
And the After Effects to all the steam. Same with all the fire. I'm like, oh my god, it's so bad.
What do you got? What do you got, Jake? What'd you think of this one?
I thought it was all right. Everything was fine up until the mutant mind-reading telepathic humans. Everything was fine. I think it would have made a lot of sense if they were like mutants. That like totally makes sense. And them worshiping some bomb thing. I'm like, okay, I can kind of see that.
But the psychic
and then
powers.
The telepathy. I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
And then how he's not talking at all, and he's just like talking to the open air. I'm like, this is kind of
make up your mind. Can you use your lips or not?
You want him to go, I know, I'm talking. I can hear myself.
And then after that, they talk the whole rest of the movie.
Yeah.
He's so dumb.
Justine, what did you think?
I loved it.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Like, they took off their mask and it freaked me out. I was kind of scared.
That part was
seeing
cool.
them
that
like
cool,
that.
Cool.
It actually scared me. I think this movie's a little scary.
Mm. No, that's good. See, that's good. You went with it,
and then and the other thing that really scared me was them being a choir. Actually, the people there reading their choir voices and singing everything.
You mean their religious zeal is really scary?
No. Just the way
yeah.
Oh no, they were singing. They were praying to the bomb.
They were choir people.
Their singing was it wasn't off, but it sounded really creepy.
Even when they were talking, the way they talked, it was like a choir, and it freaked me out a little. Mm-hmm.
It was like a collective.
It was like a cult.
Yeah,
was
that a cult.
Scary?
Yeah,
that scared me.
Cult
really
of the
bad.
Bomb.
Nothing about this movie was scary.
I don't know. That freaked me out. If I saw that, I would. Panic.
You know, good for you, Justine. You go with the movie and you enjoy it.
Oh, she puts herself in their shoes in this movie.
But the beginning part I thought was kind of cool with the new guy who I thought was the same guy.
Yeah,
I did for a second too. I'm like, wait,
Patrick,
oh no, it's not the same
guy. Are they just showing before? But who's this new guy? Who's this new guy?
And then they did the flashback.
Wait, is this in the past?
Yeah, it was so confusing.
It's a young Charlton Heston.
Until like it's up close and you see that guy's yellow teeth and you see the other guy's
white.
Well,
his hair was shorter, and you're like, oh, well, maybe it's the same guy.
Yeah.
He's younger.
Yeah.
I love it.
But I like the way they showed how they got him caught up on everything. I don't know. I just thought, I like this movie. It was good.
Poor Nova.
It was bad.
Yeah, poor Nova.
Poor Nova.
I mean, I could do without that.
She was going to die no matter what.
Taylor.
I really don't.
I like
her.
She's being drowned, and then as soon as she gets pulled out of the fountain, throws the hair back.
And then she's
the
just
main
like,
concern.
Fine with a dude trying to. Yeah, we're still friends. She tried to drown me. But. All right, let's get everybody's rating on Beneath the Planets. I forgot to give everybody that. Go ahead, I'll give you guys the.
What did they give it on?
It's directed by Ted Post, who is actually he's like a work. He did a lot of TV stuff. Ted Post.
Probably did the best he could with the budget he had.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
He's not a bad director. He's one of those guys. That
not
kinda,
a hack.
He's
yeah.
not a hack. He's very workmanlike. Which is kind of like damning with fame praise. But Ted Post ends up doing a lot of these movies that don't quite have a big budget, and
makes
a lot of them work.
Like when he's framing the armies, I'm going, he knows where to put the camera, but he's only got so much time, probably.
Yeah.
You know?
It stars James Franciscus, Kim Hunter, Maurice Evans, Linda Harrison, and Charlton Heston. It was released in May of 1970. It cost $4.7 million to make, made $19 million. So
what a cash cow. That's why they kept making more. It was a cash cow. Mm-hmm. They would have just kept cranking them out. So what did they? I'm just curious. Rotten Tomatoes.
I forgot to give that for the last one. Hold on.
I'm just kind of curious what they would give this.
Let me punch that into the old computer here, John. Beep boop.
What if they had shown the mutants and then it said intermission?
42% on Rotten Tomatoes, John. 6.1 on IMDb.
What was the Rotten Tomatoes?
42%.
Okay.
And I didn't give the one for Patton, did I?
No.
100%. Rotten Tomatoes, 100%.
90%. 92.
Oh, please.
Oh, I love that. Oh, please.
92. Rotten Tomatoes, 5 out of 5. IMDb.
I could see it.
Punching it up right now.
Coming
best
up. Movie all time.
95% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That was close.
Oh, my God.
8 out of 10 on
8.10.
8.10, which is a 9 if you're playing long enough. Let's talk about it.
Personal.
What does everybody give Beneath?
Yeah, what do you give it?
This is probably like a 5. It's entertaining. The first the first two-thirds
if you
are
like
fine.
The characters, yeah.
It's a 5 for me. John, what do you give it?
I'd give it like a 6. I just like the series, you know.
Patrick?
I'd give it like a 4.5.
Jake?
Yeah, I'd give it like a 6.
Justine loved it.
6.
Okay.
Boom. So loved it. Give
as
it a 5.
Good as Casablanca. As
what good. I love is we're like, it's all right, a 6. And she goes, loved it. 6. In my universe, 6 is I love the hell
sixes
out of it.
6s are great. Can't get better than a 6.
All right, Jake, you have to shut up for the next 5 minutes, okay?
Would Patrick give it?
Oh, Patrick, what'd you give it?
4.5.
4.5. You give it 4.5.
You didn't watch Dirty Harry?
4.5.
No, we're not talking about Dirty Harry. Bullet. We're talking about Bullet.
So a couple weeks ago, we went to the...
Why are we talking about Dirty Harry?
Because this has some this has some precedent.
We're going to talk about Bullet
some
first.
Some things that kind of bleed into.
Because you didn't feel they kind of went into one another? You didn't feel
yeah,
like...
but what year was the Bullet?
Bullet was 1968.
Oh, it was before...
And Dirty Harry was 71.
Mm-hmm.
You get Lalo Schifrin doing the music on both of them.
Then yes, I get it.
All right, so we're going to talk about...
got a similar vibe.
We're going to talk about Bullet right now. You guys ready?
Ready.
Okay, born ready.
Let's go.
You can contribute if you want, Jake.
Yeah, sure. Make some shit up.
Sure, I love that. I love that scene with the thing and the guns and stuff. Let's go.
You did see it.
Yeah. There's only one scene with a gun.
Yeah, I was going to say,
so, I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah, the scene. I didn't say the scenes.
You could just say, oh, the chase was great.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not going to play the airplane sounds?
God.
Great acting. Great acting. Wonderful acting.
Does anybody know what this is from? This is the great Lalo Schifrin. Did the score for both Bullet and Dirty Harry. Most times during the Mission Impossible film. And this is just Steve McQueen driving in his car, noticing he's being tailed by a black Dodge Charger. Great. So let's talk about Bullet. We went on a field trip to the Twin Pines Mall. We saw the 50th anniversary release of Bullet with Steve McQueen. We didn't get to it. It wasn't on our list of 60s movies, but I love this movie. I love it because it's not, it's not an essential movie as far as, you know, great movies of the 60s, aside from the car chase. But it is interesting as a template that a lot of movies would follow. It was kind of the birth of the modern cop movie,
right?
And it was it was done in a very realistic way. Even the car chase is done so that the cars aren't doing anything that a real car wouldn't be able to do.
It doesn't look like Hollywood.
It doesn't look like Hollywood. Yeah. It's very much a procedural.
The explosions wasn't a Hollywood thing.
Well, that was
the one Hollywood thing.
Oh, damn.
The car crashed in the gas station.
Although that looks like what it would look like. It didn't, you know what I mean? It's not like one of these CGI fireballs.
Like the fire was real, but most time when you crash in the gas station, it doesn't usually explode like
Bullet
that.
Bullet is from 1968. It was directed by Peter Yates.
Have you
Yates.
Crashed into a gas station recently?
Directed by Peter Yates. It has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.5% on IMDb. It stars Steve McQueen, Jacqueline Bisset, Robert Vaughn, and the great Simon Oakland.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. Justine, since you're the big Steve McQueen guy,
girl,
what did you think of this one?
Loved it. Yeah. I really don't like him as a person. I really want to love Steve McQueen, and I have a hard conflicting thing about, I don't know.
You and everybody
very
else.
Conflicting lady boner.
It's like a movie. It's like a movie. Like, you don't know the actual person until you meet them, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about him.
It's like a painting. You don't
then
have
you
to...
meet him and he's an ass, so. He's probably not an ass in real life. He's just an ass when it comes to his acting and how much promotion he gets, so.
You have to be able to separate the actor from the person.
Yeah.
The character from
but
the person.
But I love him in his movies, so it's just, it's so irritating, but... He's super cool.
Would you not want to make as much money as you can when you're starring in a movie?
I wouldn't go as far as he is, like where he wants the same amount of lines as another guy, or he's mad because that person's wearing that sweater.
And... He got to wear his sweater.
Come on.
We got to, there was a great little clip in the beginning that it was like a 20-minute commercial for Ford, but they did talk about some of the stuff, and his wife said that he went through the script and picked out all the non-essential dialogue and gave it to the other detective. And so the other detective is supposed to say all these lines. He goes, I'm supposed to say all these lines while the camera stays on you? And Steve McQueen said, I'm the star, baby. Like, that's such a great... I mean, but he knew how to market himself. He knew how to... He knew... And you know what?
Some people would say, hey, I want all the lines. And it's like, I don't need all that.
But it worked for that character because he's very kind of a laconic.
It's like a Bronson, Clint Eastwood thing.
Yeah. But there was a lot of great little touches in this movie. They even, and stuff that they don't even call attention to. Like, they basically run the good cop, bad cop routine in this movie.
Yes.
And they don't call attention to it. When, for no reason, all of a sudden, Steve McQueen just tells this guy, look, he's not going to cooperate. Just take him downtown.
Yeah.
And his partner's like, but he's really trying, Frank.
not trying hard enough.
Yeah. He's not trying hard enough. Yeah. And then and they kind of run the good guy. And so it's like all the stuff you see in all these movies later, and especially you see a lot of it because the character in Dirty Harry and the character of Frank Bullitt are based on the same detective.
Right.
Who was a real detective who later on did investigate the Zodiac killings.
Mark Ruffalo playing that guy in Zodiac.
Yeah, and they even make mention of the fact that the holster.
Who wears the holster that way?
He's like McQueen. He's the guy that gave McQueen the idea in Bullet to wear his holster like that. So he was a real life San Francisco detective. So this is kind of based on his life or his style.
How'd you like to be that guy? You get two movies.
Yeah, two movies.
Two of the biggest movies on your.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same name.
His name was Dave Tosche, I think.
But they didn't give the same name?
No. No, because one's Frank Bullitt and one's Harry Callahan. But they're based on the same guy.
Duh.
Come on, Justine.
Jeez.
Get it together.
Duh, in the title. Come on.
I love it. A guy named Bullitt. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're putting me on. You can almost imagine somebody going, really? His name's Bullitt?
Yeah. Frank Bullitt.
I liked it, though. I mean, I would watch it with the volume a little bit lower, but... I loved it.
I think it's
not that bad. The problem that Justine is referring to is we went to see it in a theater that was cranked for modern movies, and this movie is it's a 60s movie, so early, you know, stereo.
Ambient sound.
Lots of treble, not a lot of bass yet. Yeah. Dr. Bose hadn't invented his system yet, so there's a lot of, so the whole last 10 minutes takes place on the runways of SFO Airport. And the jets are going by, and it literally...
It sounds like a jet.
It was...
Freaking hurt.
Yeah. It was loud.
I wanted to be like him and cover my ears. Yeah. It was just so much. But the part that I just lost my shit was when he saw the car come up behind him.
Oh, so good.
And it was Steve McQueen behind him. I was like, oh, shit!
Oh, and the tailing Steve McQueen, and then...
He
turns
God.
A corner, and they lose him for a second.
Like, you knew it was going to happen, but to see it and the way they showed it with the rearview mirror.
Like, yeah.
I lost my shit.
Bad guy looks up in the rearview mirror, and there is the Mustang.
I think, oh, no. Oh, yeah, because I was sitting next to Patrick. I was like, oh, shit. I just didn't expect. It was good.
That is a really great car chase because it's, again, no music. The music cuts as soon. Cuts as soon as the bad guy takes off.
And listening to like how they practice, so you kind of watch and look for it. And you're like, wow, yeah, they did a really good job.
You would hate this, Justine, but did they talk about it on the? They did talk about it on that little Ford commercial. How Steve McQueen messed up one of the turns, and then threw it in reverse, but then made sure he stuck his head out the window, so you could see that it was him driving.
Mm-hmm. he's such a pain. Like,
but it
that
it,
scene makes it sells it. That chase.
It sells yeah. it because you see, it's not. That's what makes it not so Hollywood. You go, okay, he didn't make every turn. You know.
Yeah, that
in real life you might overshoot it. You know?
Yeah, because in those '60s cars were not built for that kind of driving,
and that's why they kept it
they're,
in.
They're meant to go fast in a straight line.
Right.
What was Steve McQueen's last movie? Do you know?
It was called The Hunter. He plays a
hunter.
He plays it's a real life story about it's a story based on a real person who was a bounty hunter. Ooh. And it's on Amazon right now.
Yeah,
it's really good. It's really, because Steve McQueen died pretty young. He was in
50.
40? He was like in his 50s.
He was 50 and he had cancer. I think he was looking for some experimental went to Mexico for some experimental cancer treatment.
Yeah, it's called The Hunter. It's actually quite good. Not highly rated, but it's a movie I enjoy because it's kind of funny.
His last couple movies are pretty solid. Papillon's great. If you ever want to,
I was just telling you. Yeah,
yeah, he's really good in that.
Yeah, I like this movie a lot. I kind of want to see like behind the scenes footage. I know we saw a few, but
if you get the DVDs of these, this and The Great Escape,
The documentary.
They have like documentaries that were made at the time too. They were kind of like press.
That's really cool.
And they're like little 20-minute movies. And they break down like what they kind of went into that. If you watch
Where Eagles Dare,
Where Eagles Dare has one too, yeah.
And The Wild Bunch has one.
Do they?
They would do these things. I think they would show them before months before the movie came out to get you kind of wound up for it.
Oh, okay.
They go, we're on the set with, hey, we're here with Steve McQueen on the set. Oh.
I just remember my buddy Robert and I like to quote during the Dirty Dozen. There's this thing where they call all the actors action guys. Lee Marvin is an action guy, you know.
Lee Marvin. Just a drunk guy all the time. But, I mean, he was fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know,
he's just a drunk.
You see Point Blank or something like that, you see what,
you know. One movie we're not going to get to is called The Big Red One, and it's about the 1st Infantry Division. It was made in 1979. Mark Hamill, in between Star Wars and Empire, is in it. And Lee Marvin plays a sergeant in the 1st Infantry Division, and it follows their exploits from like landing in North Africa to like Italy, all the way into like D-Day through World War II. So it might be a movie you might want to watch. It's pretty good, and it's Lee Marvin's really good. You can see a young Mark Hamill. It's kind
of cool. He's got a long career. He's in a lot of old film noirs. You know, he's in The Wild One.
You know what though? You watch Paint Your Wagon, and you don't see him the same after that.
You don't see him as Hector the cowboy in Bad Day at Black Rock. I'm so glad we watched Bad Day at Black Rock because so much of the stuff we has gone back to that movie. You know, you have the director of that directs Magnificent Seven, directs Great Escape, and then you have like Borgnine, you have Robert Ryan, all these actors we've come back to, and Lee Marvin all came out of that movie.
I know.
So I'm kind of glad we watched that one because that ended
it's
up
like
being
ground zero.
Yeah.
They pull all those guys together.
Ended up being like a focal point for a little bit. Patrick, what did you think of Bullet?
It was a lot of fun. The car chase throughout the city was great. And it was a different kind of interpretation of the. Didn't you get like your typical running around the city in a car that just, it felt realistic.
It was also amazing that they did almost the whole thing on location. You could tell that was a real hospital. You could tell that was like a real, those are real buildings they're going in and
you
out
can
of.
You can tell where people were stopped, where they couldn't walk through the street.
Yeah, you can kind of see that. Or in some of the car chases, you can kind of see how they set it up too, that green Volkswagen is a stunt driver, or you know what I mean. But you know, like the way it's shot, it's still pretty cool, you know.
And then, like character wise, Steve McQueen's character Bullet was actually a really good character. Like you feel a lot of empathy for him and what he's going through, and him struggling to find out what's going on and catch the bad guy, pretty much.
Bad guys do.
Oh yeah, so good. And like there's like subtle moments in this movie where he's not like you would expect him to be, and this is supposed to be 1968, right? You would expect him to be like some kind of racist cop, and he's really not. He sticks up for, you know, different people.
Yeah.
He's not your typical. It's not your typical cop movie.
Yeah.
It sets a lot of the groundwork for a lot of buddy cop movies, but it doesn't feel like.
No, it doesn't. He's a little bit. He's not quite an anti-hero like Dirty Harry, but he is doing things his own way. But what I love about it, the dynamic is, one thing you don't get in a lot of later movies is his captain trusts him.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Lets him, like,
he backs him up.
That was great.
He backs him up, you know, and he's
get a little bit of that in Dirty Harry.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit, but at the same time, it's a little bit more antagonistic, too.
But, I mean, it was great. Just the only problem I had was the sound at that end part.
John, what did you think of this one?
Oh, I love Bullet. Yeah, that's one of the best Steve McQueen movies. You'd have to put that up there with The Great Escape.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one.
If you're going to pick a handful.
You and I, and the reason we wanted to watch this one is because I wanted you guys to see it in the theater, because A, anytime you get a chance to see a movie like this in the theater, do it. And B, Dirty Harry, we're going to talk about in a minute. And
Last time I saw Bullet was at the New Beverly. They're playing it with Dirty Harry.
Ah,
it was a great double feature.
That is a good double feature.
Yeah.
All right, so let's give Bullet our ratings, everybody. Justine, let's start with you, the number one Steve McQueen. The love-hate relationship you have with Steve McQueen.
It's hard, I know. I give him an 8.
Oh, that's a good one.
Give him an 8, but what do you give the movie?
As a person, it would be a lot lower.
Patrick?
I also give this an 8. I really enjoyed it.
John?
Yeah, it's an 8.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to give it a 7, just because I'm very demanding.
just to be contrary.
No, I seven is good in my book. Like, 7 is
nothing wrong with a 7.
Yeah, 7's like an A minus for me. Jake, what did you give it based on our ratings?
Oh, I gave it a solid 8.
There you go. Yeah. So let's talk Dirty Harry now. Now we've seen Steve McQueen, so we're gonna take it into 1970 now.
Some good hair.
With some big hair.
It's San Francisco. Woo!
San Francisco
again.
Again, shot a lot of it shot on location.
San Francisco was definitely on location.
Mm-hmm.
And Lalo Schifrin.
Yeah, Lalo Schifrin again doing the score, so it feels very much the same. Dirty Harry, a little bit more of a snappy dresser than Frank Bullet. You get those sweater vest combos.
No, mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. McQueen dressed way better.
Yeah,
for 68, he was pretty sharp.
I thought
that
so.
That blue turtleneck and then that tweed jacket with the elbow pads. McQueen looked really good.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's weird. Yeah.
71 is an odd thing because you get the plaid with the wide lapels.
Yeah.
71 is odd. When you look at advertisements from the early 70s, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
How was that ever a thing? You know,
those colors, some of those color schemes,
mm-hmm.
and some of the patterns.
Nothing wrong with it.
In the 70s. Let's talk. Who wants Jake?
Yes.
Let's start you off with. Let's kick you off with Dirty Harry. What did you think of this one? And now, you know, we've seen Clint Eastwood be kind of the sympathetic character in the Man with No Name trilogy, a merciless killer, but also a bit more sympathetic. Now, what did you think of Dirty Harry? Now
he's a merciless killer. Oh my God, he's such an asshole. He does not care about anybody or anything except catching the bad guy, no matter what it takes, whether it breaks the law or not.
Yeah,
and it kind of bites him. It kind of bites him in the ass. So
a little bit.
I thought that was kind of cool. You'd like. Usually when you see like these types of movies, it's kind of like, oh, you know, the law, it's like, it's fine, we caught the bad guy. And it's like, no, it's like, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. We can't use any of this evidence. You know, you attacked him. So it's like, it's, you know, it's a shock that he's not suing us and it's all this other stuff. So
that's a very, but it's funny about that scene is I just thought of it. That's a very right wing kind of scene where, you know, you're supposed to follow the letter of the law. It's like, no, you know, law and order. It was very much the politics of the time and the politics of you know, the modern politics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of these movies, it starts to creep. Clint Eastwood's own politics kind of start to creep into a lot of these. So it's kind of funny to see that after the kind of apolitical stance of like the spaghetti westerns that made him famous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he can't necessarily make really political statements with the westerns he's doing. So it's kind of these kind of become the outlet for that. So it's kind of interesting to see that. Did you what did you think of
the villain?
What did you think of Clint Eastwood? Like, he has more dialogue in this one.
He does have a lot more dialogue. I thought it was all right. He's not like, I don't know, he's really good at the strong silent type.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little different to see him having a more active role or more like a vocal role.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I still thought it was good. I even thought the villain was
crazy.
Fucking insane.
Talk about a villain.
That's a pretty solid villain.
Right.
It was.
He seriously could have been a Joker.
I don't remember. I don't think they like they don't explain why he's just crazy. He loves to kill. He loves to kill.
Yeah,
randomly
that opening scene where he's on the rooftop is so like it's jarring because you're not expecting it. Mm-hmm. Especially after watching Mutants and Planet of the Apes. I mean, think of that. That's the same year.
Yeah.
So
even the scene where it's the second attempt he tries to kill somebody. He's sitting on that roof and he's looking at the gay couple. Gay couple who's walking down, and he's like scoping them out and just wants to kill him just because he doesn't like black people.
Yeah. It's crazy. A lot of hate.
It's just he's very twisted, and I thought that was kind of interesting to see, like, kind of the mind of a twisted person. Yeah.
They do a good job with, there's a lot of tension, the way they build the whole thing where you don't know where he's going to be, and, you know, all those scenes where he's
just
watching
like
people.
All the cops on the roofs of
the
San
cops,
Francisco.
Like, they, like, almost catch him, like, 50 times in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And somehow manages to get away.
Gets away. By the way, Dirty Harry was directed by Don Siegel, and it stars Clint Eastwood. The screenplay was by John Milius, which is why we probably have some of that Law and Order stuff.
John Milius? He wasn't listed on the...
Julian Fink, R.M. Fink, and Chuck Reisner Jr. did the screenplay.
I didn't see Milius' name on the... is he credited?
Oh, you know what? Maybe that was
He did. I think he might have done Magnum Force or something.
Yeah, maybe it's all of them.
Because I watched it this morning. I ran out of time. I watched it this morning.
It's 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm.
Oh, really?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I think Milius did a couple of the sequels. And yeah, he does seem like the right guy for that character, because that's Milius, you know, the tough guy dialogue.
You have to ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky?
Well, do you, punk?
Well, do you, punk?
I gotta know.
I got to know.
I love that he does the same speech again.
Yes.
I'm like, yes, you're so awesome and consistent.
It's like, it's like Julius from Pulp Fiction. He does the same speech. Mm-hmm.
What I love at the last time he does the speech is he can barely spit it out. He's in such a hurry to blow
this
guy away.
He's so angry, too.
He's all right, I'm gonna give my spiel. Well, do you, punk?
Yeah.
It's like, he's a little quicker. I really want to kill you now. So.
After he did it, I really want him to say... After he says, did I do 5 or 6? And I really wanted to say after he shoots him, I reloaded.
Yeah. Let me tell you what about Dirty Harry. I just found this out. It was the 4th highest grossing movie of 1971.
No.
After Fiddler on the Roof.
Rich Man.
French Connection, which we're not going to get to, but essential viewing. You should watch it.
Absolutely.
And believe it or not, what do you think number 3 was, John?
Like MASH?
Diamonds Are Forever.
Well, James Bond, you know, it didn't matter if it was good or bad. A James Bond movie is going to make a whole lot of money.
James Bond should get in trouble for going and breaking the rules and shit.
But he's an agent.
He's a secret agent.
Yeah.
He's not a policeman.
Yeah. Laws don't apply to him.
So irritating.
He's got diplomatic immunity.
That's why he gets to tell a lady he has to kiss her and I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
He can't get sexual assault charges when he has no...
Wait, is James Bond coming back? No, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mario keeps changing his mind. Every week he changes his mind.
No, we're not doing Diamonds Are Forever. He is coming back.
Okay, so you won't be seeing Sean Connery anymore.
We get to see Moonraker.
Are
we going to Live and Let Die?
Going to space.
Moonraker.
Bond in space.
Is that the song?
No.
No. Yeah, Shirley Bassey sings
like,
everything
dun,
song.
Dun, dun,
yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Moonraker.
Moonraker. Wider than a mile.
He loves rakes. He loves only rakes. He loves rakes.
Yeah, and then you just saw a guy raking.
That's right.
Moonraker.
Daydreamer.
There's a moon base and some dude's just raking up leaves.
Yep. Midnight and the kitties are sleeping. So let's talk about...
You lost your place.
Dirty Harry. Justine! Yeah.
What'd you think?
You're a big Clint Eastwood guy.
Yeah, I loved it.
Girl.
Did you?
Mm-hmm. He's so badass. Mm-hmm. I freaking love him. But you know what? His hair. You know when you go to a fair and there's the little like cloth thing and it has the little hair that sticks out all the way around and you throw the baseball to knock it over?
Yes.
That's what he looks like.
Yeah, that hair did not do him any favors.
He has a big 70s. Well, because he has the receding. He's getting the widow's peak by this time. His hairline's starting to recede because he's getting older. He doesn't go bald, per se, but he's just...
it's like a pompadour.
Yeah.
And because it's San Francisco, the wind keeps blowing it back, so he does look
like
one of those...
He looks like those little things that have hair everywhere. Yeah. Anyway, he's just so badass to go into a freaking diner
And then he looks over, he's like, is that blah, 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 or whatever his name is.
Is that car still there?
Yeah, and he asked about the car, and then he just comes out there like a badass, just shooting out of nowhere.
Shoving a hot dog in his mouth.
I love that he gets one bite, and he's all, shit. Because he thinks he goes, oh, the cavalry, just wait here, and the cavalry will come. Call this number, it's the police.
He didn't want to get involved.
This character, I know it's based off of a cop, but I feel like that cop watched a movie of people just shooting up anywhere, and was high on that and just went and just shot up in the street thinking it's a movie set. Like, watching it was just a little, that was crazy.
Yeah, could a cop carry a gun like that?
Yeah, and can he just shoot to kill? That's crazy.
It was really interesting, too. It's just like, he's not really trying to wound him.
No, he's not. He's just like, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing in this movie. There's no gray area. It's cut and dried. Yeah. The bad guys are the bad guys. And he's the good guy, and that's it. And there's no gray area.
Well, there's no gray area until the DA gets involved.
And don't question the good guy.
And I thought he was going to get a partner that was going to live, but...
He did get a partner that lived.
He lived.
Yeah, he lived.
He just got shot and ended up in the hospital.
Well, yeah, he said he doesn't lose him. They just all go to the hospital, which ends up happening again.
He doesn't like Spix.
You know what, though?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he warned them, so...
Did you like that?
He's
gave
racist
him a little,
against everybody.
He gave him a little wink, and he's like, I get it, it's a joke.
Yeah, it's a joke, I'm racist. Frank Bullitt wouldn't put up with that bullshit.
No, it's definitely two different sides. Frank Bullitt's very like, it's cool, man, I'm supportive.
Bullitt doesn't pull his gun until the very end of the movie. You never see him pull a gun.
It's two different kinds of movies. Yeah. It really is.
And like the first
same
scene,
cop, different
in
movie.
In the very first scene, you see Harry Callahan.
Well,
like,
you know what? That happened first, and then he started to shoot more.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But then he couldn't hit the guy from across the roof with the rifle.
I know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I was so mad. At
also, that. With the guy jumping, the suicide guy, you're like, he's got no sympathy. He's all,
he's like, I don't care if you jump.
All,
I'm just like, I was kind of surprised he's on the roof at night with an elephant gun to hit the other guy, and I'm like, okay, I get it. He carries a big handgun, but he's really compensating.
Yeah, well,
it's excessive.
Yeah, it's funny because he misses.
And every time he shoots, you just say, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
throw his hands up in the air, and throw back because he's like,
and the guy's
recoil.
Like, ah, yeah. He's freaking out. It's like, okay, you got like 5 seconds to shoot this guy right now.
You have time.
You have plenty of time to get him.
That is a good scene, though. That is all well done. I mean, it's all done. You get to see San Francisco in the 70s.
Yeah, but when the bus does the turn and he's standing up there on that bridge.
Oh,
what?
My
damn!
God.
Yeah, that is a great scene.
It reminded me of Bullitt when you see him come up behind the car because it was one of those oh shit moments again.
That was a crazy scene with the killer.
Because you see him just freak out because he's like, this guy's unstoppable. He's coming for me
as
no matter what.
As if he didn't snap before. He like completely lost it.
Yeah. Oh my God.
A great villain. I mean, he kind of annoyed me at first, but then I was like, no, he's just crazy.
That whole scene in the football field is great.
Hey, man, I got my rights, man.
Yeah. One doctor, man.
Oh, and then the helicopter backs up.
I'll show you your rights.
Yeah, you can tell it's a helicopter shot because his tie
the grass is going everywhere. You're like, oh, okay.
That's a crazy shot. It's like, it's just you, me, and the football stadium. Yeah. You're in an empty football stadium. I'm going to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
He's like, you need any help, Callahan? Go find something to eat, fatso.
Yeah. Go get yourself something. Oh, that's so many good lines in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great one.
What did you guys think of this one? Let's, John, where does this rate for you?
Yeah, this is oddly enough, this isn't one of my favorite Clint Eastwood movies. This is the iconic Clint Eastwood movie. It's never been one of my favorites. But you can see all these moments. This is all the moments that's, you know, spawned another 5 movies.
Yeah, this is like the first really unhinged killer. Like,
yeah,
that.
This is the first one, and then they just kept cranking them out. There's like 5 more Dirty Harry movies.
Yeah,
but this is the most effective. Yeah, that Andy Robinson playing the psycho, Scorpio.
Great job,
Scorpio.
That's
yeah.
the guy you want. This guy taken out. You know, so it almost justifies whatever Harry does. Mm-hmm. You know, it just
they make him so bad. You're like, yeah, he must die. Obviously,
kill him.
Exactly.
He must die.
There's no subtlety here. It's just like he's really bad. So just unleash your worst, your mad dog. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's the Patton.
Yeah, and this is peak Clint Eastwood, obviously. But I tend to like the westerns better. But I probably saw every one of these Dirty Harry movies as they came out. You know. It's like every couple of years. It's one of those things where he'd do one for himself. I mean, he was, by this point, he's directing movies. As a matter of fact, there's a scene where he's walking across the street and the theater says, "Play Misty for me."
Yeah, that was Clint Eastwood.
Because the year before, that was his first directing credit as a Clint Eastwood directing. That's Play right. Misty for me. And he said he learned everything he knew from Sergio Leone and Don Siegel. He says, you know, just from watching those guys work, because he did a lot of movies with Don Siegel.
There you go.
So he says that's where he learned everything.
You know? Don Siegel, of course, the director of...
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
A solid director. And he said he just learned so much just watching him. But yeah, I mean, this is a ride, you know, for sure.
I was going to look something up real quick just to make sure, because I believe... Yeah, he did direct Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
He goes all the way back to the 40s.
He directed Hell is for Heroes.
Yeah.
One of our early Steve McQueen movies. And did you recognize anybody from Hell is for Heroes in this one, guys? Anybody?
Was it his partner?
It was not his partner.
I don't know.
No, it was...
He also directed The Beguiled. The Beguiled.
Ugh.
Wasn't it The Mayor?
It wasn't The Mayor.
That movie.
It was The Captain.
Oh.
The Captain was...
Harry Gordino?
Yes, Harry Gordino, who was in... He was in Hell is for Heroes.
Yeah. I love... Oh, Hell is for Heroes is one of my favorites.
He turns up in a lot of war movies. The good old Harry Gordino. But, yeah, good cast. Everybody is well cast.
Yeah, solid.
The bad guy's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's the stereotypical psycho bad guy, you know?
No reason for doing it, just does it because he wants to.
Patrick, did we get your thoughts already?
No, but it's okay.
Hit me.
Most everybody said everything. This was a ride. I mean, you go for a lot of... I mean, just the first scene of him blowing away the robbers alone, you're just like, okay, I get it. That's the kind of cop he is.
That really sets the tone,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, it sets it like crazy.
That's a great place to put it at the very beginning, yeah.
And I just, his line's most powerful handgun in the world. I'm just like, really, man? Come on.
Fat magnet.
Blow your head.
So,
clean
I mean, you
up.
Definitely see a lot of Clint Eastwood in this movie.
If you're a Clint Eastwood fan, this has got to be at the top for you, you know?
You know, he's not. I enjoy him a lot more in all the Westerns, but I think this was just, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And the villain just stole it.
That's good. All right, let's get our rankings.
I'll bet you he was typecast. If you looked at Andy Robinson, I bet he played, I'm guessing he played psychos through the rest of his life.
He does look very crazy.
Apparently he complained that he was typecast after this. He could not get work.
Sure, because this is the sort of role that could really...
I mean, he does it well.
You're not going to play a good guy for a few years, you know?
Let's see, Andrew Robinson. Wow, listen to this. He is an American actor and former director of the Master of Fine Arts acting program at USC.
Jesus.
Wow. Yeah.
He's all, why don't I get any Shakespeare, for Christ's sake?
Yeah.
because in Macbeth, there's no line where you go, God, I need my rights, man. I got rights. Like, where's my doctor, man?
He ended up doing a lot of TV afterwards. Mm. Yeah.
It seems like when you're watching like Mannix or Streets of San Francisco, the psycho killer is always sort of based on... Give me an Andy Robinson type.
He was actually a regular on Deep Space Nine.
Really?
He was Elam Garrick, a Cardassian tailor and former operative of the...
He's a Cardassian?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So he's like, finally, you know, put some makeup on me and I don't have to be the psycho anymore.
He originally read for the role of Odo, which went to René Auberjonois. And, you know, but there you go. So he was on the show. That was it.
Cool.
But, yeah, he did. He's got quite a career. If you see his face now, you've seen him in stuff. You've
right.
Definitely seen
him. Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So what does everybody give Harry? I'm just wild about Harry. What do you got? Justine.
I gave it an 8.
8. Patrick?
I agree. 8.
8.
Really solid.
Like a 8.9.
8.9. Almost a 9.
She's loving some Clint
Eastwood. Yeah, I just can't give it a 9, though.
Why?
There just wasn't enough.
Was it the wire on the car?
Mm-hmm. No, there wasn't like.
What wire?
Oh my god, that wire was horrible.
If when they to get the car to flip over the fire hydrant, you can actually see the wire.
Oh, the cable
wire that's just. Boop.
Oh. Well, it's probably because that's the problem with Blu-ray. You see, or like HD, you see stuff you were never meant to see when it's just on film.
Yeah, like that guy's yellow teeth in Planet of the Apes. I was like, oh, no.
You want to talk about teeth? Talk about Patton's teeth.
Well, I just kept thinking, I'm like, oh, it's the time.
Those are gnarly.
But the other guy had white teeth. I'm like, oh.
Charlton Heston was famous for his white teeth.
Yeah, he did a good job with it. Good job.
Good job with those white teeth.
Good job.
In the future, there'll be no toothbrushes.
Jake?
Yes?
What did you give Dirty Harry?
I gave it an 8.
You loved it?
I loved it.
You loved every second of it?
I wouldn't say every second, but I loved a lot, most of it.
John Sandy?
I give it a 7.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm 7.
Yeah.
I'm 777 this week. I'm all 7s. Jackpot.
Come on, 7.
All right, so our next show is going to be, we'll be recording on Halloween. Are you guys going to be here on Halloween?
No.
Yes.
No, next week.
No, our next digital movie.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
We'll be on Halloween. We're doing 370s horror classics.
Why do you bring him?
I don't. He drives himself.
Oh. I do.
we have the Halloween, the John Carpenter classic Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
We have Dawn of the Dead,
George Romero's
sequel to the famous Night of the Living Dead, and Alien, Ridley Scott, Alien. So.
Are there any sequel to? Night of Living Dead?
Yes, the first sequel. Mm-hmm. In color. Is there any of these? Okay, I've never seen Dawn of the Dead. Has anybody not seen Halloween or Alien?
No, I haven't seen Dawn of the Dead. I've seen Halloween and I've seen Alien.
I haven't seen any of those.
You've never seen Alien?
I haven't seen Alien in a very long time.
Well, but
and I haven't seen Halloween all the way through.
Wow. I think I've seen Alien 2 then.
You've seen Aliens.
You've seen Aliens, probably.
Yeah.
That's the one with the giant queen and really.
Yeah, I think I just
away
never.
From her, not you jerk!
The birthing.
Something like that.
Great one too, Aliens.
So we'll be getting to that.
Yes.
That's on the list. So 80. Get those ready for that'll be on Halloween. We'll be recording on Halloween.
We're gonna be in costume.
We're gonna be in costume.
It's gonna be a graveyard smash.
It's gonna be a spooktacular event.
Is the new Halloween movie coming out?
Yes,
I want to see it.
I think it's coming out next week. I think.
Oh, okay.
And with this new Halloween movie, they're gonna act like none of the sequels ever happened.
Yeah.
It's gonna take place 40 years after the first one.
Yeah.
And they're gonna disregard all the sequels, all nine
She's
of them.
She's been waiting for them this whole time, and it's gonna be just
what's that?
A double feature.
Oh, anywhere. Maybe I'll bet you some theaters are doing that.
They might.
Let's do it.
Go watch it in the drive-in and cry.
Make out.
Spend all that money just to make out.
Well,
girl,
in the 60s.
I used to do it at Disneyland.
Just seems frugal.
Even
Disneyland. Buy a Disney pass.
They were cheaper then, too.
You used to do a lot worse
than
Disneyland.
I'll take you to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. So I can make
Get you
out
go on the
you.
Adventures Through Inner Space ride.
It's like paying for love.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about Matterhorn.
Make out
Matterhorn.
I made
a great joke there. Nobody heard it.
Yeah,
I did.
F, you know, for a fornication.
Yeah.
Fornication.
You're magnificent. So, where can we find everyone on the Twitch or the Twitter? Or the interwebs. Let's talk about that for a second.
The Bedrock Twitch.
Because we are bad at self-promotion. So, mm-hmm. Jake, Twitter handle and your Twitch stream, please.
I'm taking a break from Twitch. Or have been taking a break from Twitch.
Boo.
But you can find me on Twitter at HandsomeDan93.
Patrick?
You can find me on the Twitters at PDMax779.
Where can we find some of your wonderful artwork?
I don't know. It's a secret.
It's on his Instagram.
Wow, talk about self-promotion.
It's on your Instagram.
Instagram
that
the same
was a
name.
Slow ball.
Yeah.
Justini Weenie.
Yeah, that's it. You got it.
Actually, you
that's
did.
That's your Twitter handle.
Underscore Weenie.
Justini
underscore
Weenie. John is not available
hashtag
on the
she
internet.
She likes the Weenie.
But you can find me wandering the aisles at Levels Records.
Wandering the wasteland.
Or at the public library.
That's right.
The Dodger game is it started 10 minutes ago. Let's get a quick update.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Dodgers down.
And he said we had to rush this to get there.
Bum,
son of a gun!
Look at the dedication.
Bum, what's the score?
Bum, 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 bum.
Do I have to tell you?
Yes.
Bum, 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 bum.
Dodgers are winning.
It's bottom of the first. Nil. No score.
That's fine. That's not bad.
Bum,
that's
fine.
I would rather come into that than to be seeing, like, you know,
6-0 yeah.
Milwaukee.
That's what she said.
Like, okay. I'm trying to be supportive, too.
You're a good egg, even though you're a stinking Giants fan. So, for everybody, I'm going to drop the song.
As we, Mario's like, fuck it, I got to go.
So, for everybody.
Baseball!
So, for everybody.
As we close out, this is a song called Mobbin' by Grand Theft. This is the song that plays on the Dodgers hype video when we go into the ninth inning. So I'm going to play that today because we're going to take it today. Kurtz is on the mound. Our bats are heating up. Please,
you guys can do it. You've earned
please,
it.
Please, please swing for contact Dodgers.
Yeah, okay. Get on base, guys.
Justine, it was a pleasure. Patrick, it was a pleasure. Jake, it was a pleasure. John, it was an honor.
You're welcome.
I love that. You're more than welcome.
Follow us on Twitter at Soup Complex, S-O-U-P Complex. Facebook page is facebook.com/Soup Complex. And drop us a line at SuperiorityComplexShow@gmail.com. Make sure you participate. We do put a lot of things like listener polls. We put a recent poll up. I asked which decade everyone enjoyed so far.
1961.
30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s. Overwhelming support for the 1960s. 77% people, 77% enjoyed the 60s the most. So I think that's the era that most people are probably, our listeners are familiar with. So, but we're going to get into the 70s now. And so remember, for next Digital Movie Club, which will be on the 31st, it will be Halloween, Alien, and Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead, you may have to, if you want to watch along at home, I think may be available on YouTube. It's hard to find. It's been in and out of print.
That's what she said.
Hey, thank you.
If you live anywhere near Pasadena, they have it at Videotech in South Pasadena.
Videotech
on
South
Mission
Pass,
Street.
On Mission Street. There's today's.
That's
sponsors.
Where I got my copy.
How did you like it, John?
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
So you won't be able to find it for another 2 days because it's off the shelf.
All right. Well, we will see you guys next time. Until then, here's Mobbin', Grand Theft. Let's get hyped for them Dodgers.